Hi, and welcome to Answers News for July 21st, 2021. I'm Avery Foley. I'm here with Roger Patterson and Bodie Hodge.
Hello.
Hello.
And we have a lovely live studio audience. If you guys want to clap and say hello.
Let's hear ya.
We've got people from all over the U.S. here. We were asking them what states they were from, and we had all over the place.
Still so. Nobody from Idaho. So
come on, Idaho.
People in
get
Idaho
here.
Who are listening. You need to come down
make
and visit.
Roger
for,
happy.
Make Roger happy. All right, we've got a couple things here to talk about as we get started. And I didn't have my slides queued up, so we went backwards. And now we're going to go forward.
There we go.
All right. First thing we want to mention is Answers TV. Shout out to all the people who are watching on Answers TV right now.
Yep.
If you have not heard about our streaming platform yet, we do have our very own streaming platform, Answers.tv. Currently, there's over 3,000 videos on there with more coming all the time. You can watch the famous Mr. P in...
Unlocking Science.
Unlocking Science.
Unlocking Science.
I just blanked on the name of your
I'm
show.
I'm so famous.
I promise.
She
it's
doesn't
awesome.
Even know the name of my show.
Yeah, so that's a great show that I do know about that's on Answers TV, and there's the full conferences, there's nature programs, kids programs, music, all kinds of great stuff.
Yep.
So definitely make sure you check that out. You can try a 7-day trial for free at Answers.tv. Another thing we want to mention here is Answers Magazine. This comes out 4 times a year, and it's a really awesome biblical worldview magazine. All kinds of fantastic articles in there about God's creation, looking at some of the things that he's made, biblical worldview on what's happening in the culture and science. Roger has articles in there as well.
Yes, we get to do a little hands-on activities that we have featured in there for Unlocking Science. I just reviewed one today that'll go in one of the next issues on how to build a barometer in a bottle so you can
watch
that's
the cool.
weather.
So lots of cool stuff. So make sure you All subscribe right. for that. It comes with a 16-page kids magazine. My kids always get really excited when it arrives. So there's something for the whole family there. So make sure you check that out. All right. Getting into our news here. Our first one is our fun fluff one, which is from this time from Not the Bee. Someone found a Picasso painting in their great aunt's closet that had been there for 50 years. So can you imagine?
Okay, so who doesn't clean their closet for
50 years? For 50 years. They had this painting, a little 16-by-16-inch painting, that was made by the famous Picasso, and it had been passed down from her uncle in the late 1930s, apparently, and had been put in this closet. I don't really blame her. I don't think I would put it in my house either. And apparently didn't clean out her closets very often, because for 50 years it was there, and then when her her great-nephew, I believe, inherited the house, he found these paintings, and... Thankfully
I can imagine
recognized.
This looks like something you might find at a garage sale. Like, I don't want this in my living room anymore, so I'm going to hope somebody else wants it in their living room.
Right.
And it winds up in a closet. And apparently, this piece would be worth about $150,000 now. So, you know, people who will, like, roll up money and stick it in their mattress or something. I guess this is another form of that, right? You stick a painting in the closet.
So you're saying all those paintings I used to have in my closet that I threw out was probably a bad idea?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe not.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, you never, I mean, clean out your closets, folks. You never know what you might find. That's
right.
The moral of the story, I guess.
Yeah, and this was associated with an old stage play that he was involved in and did a lot of the design for some of that.
It was like for the curtain of the stage or something. So,
so kind
of
neat.
All right, so getting into the real news here. This one's from Daily Mail. Theory of Airlution.
Easy for you to say.
Very, very easy. Famous diagram shows ascent of man idea is so wrong, and then I don't know what happened with their title here. It sends leading geneticist ape makes no sense, so I'm not really sure. I think they forgot a couple words in their title, but it is the Daily Mail, so.
Yeah, so I think the idea here is you are all familiar with the image of an ape-like creature. It's usually an ancestor of a gibbon or something, and then it's shown in this progressive stage.
We've all seen that.
Yeah, it's
picture.
Been in textbooks for 50 years.
So
plus.
He is opining this, and I guess it's driving him ape, and he is saying this is promoting error. That's what I think the title's trying to do. And it's promoting error. And as we think about the view of evolution, his concern here is that this promotes the idea that evolution has this upward, purpose-driven goal that's intent on making things more complex. And that's a common idea that I've heard many creationists say about evolution, but that's not really true. That's not what an evolutionist typically believes. They would typically say evolution is a purposeless, it's non-directed activities that nature's undergoing, and that there's no intention of making things more complex or improving things. That just happens to be the way we see things right now, and things are more fit for those environments. So this is one of those things we need to be careful as we talk about it, so that we're representing our opponent's views accurately. We want to be honest in those things, but it's still a problematic diagram.
He's thinking more like a network. You know, things are going in all these different directions. Certain ones survive, certain ones don't. And, you know, I mean, for years, 50 years, creationists have opposed that particular drawing. Not necessarily for that particular reason, although we would agree that is an inaccuracy. But it's just nice to see some evolutionists fully admitting, hey, there's a problem with this. Maybe we shouldn't be using it. But that's the thing, you know. I mean, there's even shortened versions of this particular alleged ape-like ancestor to man that's been used in textbooks, museums.
Oh, yeah.
And in all kinds of interesting memes that show the de-evolution of people to, say, going back to the hunched over guy with his game controller.
He's going
the other way. Lots of fun things. But the diagram that's used here, and as we see diagrams in science textbooks and things, we look at the way that evolution presents these pieces as connected to one another. And there's typically a cladogram is a diagram that shows the supposed relationship between these things over millions of years. And those lines are not present. And in a lot of honest textbooks, they'll actually show dotted lines that connect these groups of things together.
These are inferred relationships.
And that's one of his concerns. He says, we've got loads of theories and loads of specimens of older humans, but we can't draw lines between those and us.
That's a very honest assessment.
Observational evidence for evolution. It's inference. Yeah.
Right, and that's a big problem. You know, we've been pointing that out for ages. You know, when it comes to looking at mankind or apes from a biblical viewpoint, God made humans. We're all descendants from Adam and Eve. God made apes and so forth. And yes, we see variations within those kinds.
Right.
But one is not changing into the other.
And I realized after Roger's pun that I owe the Daily Mail an apology because I just got their title once you said the pun. I was like, oh, it sends leading geneticist ape. Okay, now I've got it. I just thought that, okay, so I apologize to
but
anyone from the Daily Mail who's
comment.
Listening.
So you have to be a specialist to make that comment.
So I apologize. It's also interesting, he points out here about that he thinks it's a wrong view to see man as the pinnacle of evolution, that, you know, evolution has progressed to such complexity that we exist. And he's like, that's not the case. We're not some kind of pinnacle of evolution. We could just go back to some kind of four-legged creature if that's the way evolution goes. And it's like, but in a biblical worldview, mankind is the pinnacle of creation because God made us as the crown of his creation in his very image and gave us dominion over creation. So that idea really comes from a common sense. We see that we're not the same as animals.
That's a key difference.
And really it's a biblical
in the worldview
that we're
looking at.
Now, just look at this from a big picture, though. I mean, this image has been around since 1965. It's been published in most textbooks. It's been published in museums, a lot of secular media. And a lot of people have looked at that thinking this is the absolute truth. And here they are coming out going, hey.
Acknowledging that it's not.
It's not. And yet a lot of people have probably been deceived by that image more than many other images.
All right. We've got people checking in from Alabama. Hello, Lillian. And
Columbia, New York, Cincinnati, just over the river. Liverpool. Very cool. All right. Cool. Next one comes from Mexico News Daily. Paleontologists discover new species of fish that lived at time of dinosaurs. So this is talking about a new find of a previously unknown fish species that has, as you can see in the image there, has a lot of spines on its back. And it belongs to the large group of spiny finned fish, which would include things that we are very familiar with today, like bass, snappers,
bluegill,
things like that.
Yeah.
Things my dad loves to go fishing
I think
for.
It looks like a big bluegill with lots of spikes on it, in my mind.
So
it has
do you think T-Rex use those little arms to go fishing?
I doubt it. It's probably not the case.
No. But here, big picture. Look at this from a biblical viewpoint. Fish were created on
day five.
Dinosaurs were made on
day six.
So yeah, the fish kinds were all around. Now, notice I use the word kind. And here it's talking species. There is a distinction between a kind and a species. Species is actually very difficult for us to define.
Especially when we're looking at fossils.
Correct.
Because one of the key definitions we use today, thinking about species definition, is how does this interact with other similar members? Can they interbreed?
Right.
For example, there's an eastern skunk and a western skunk here in the United States, and they're classified as different species because they don't tend to interbreed. But if you put them in a cage together, they certainly could. So should we break those apart? With fossils, we don't have any information like that.
A little more difficult to do
that. A little more difficult to do those things. And that's what makes this even more tricky to identify. But as we think about this from the biblical perspective, I would totally agree. This is a fish that lived at the time of dinosaurs, as were all other fish, because God created all those different
kinds
of fish.
Was it 95 million years ago, like they say?
Yeah, was that the case?
Yeah, their reckoning is that really what it is found in about the middle Cretaceous. Cretaceous rock is rock that was laid down during the flood of Noah's day, just to give you an idea. So we expect to find some dinosaurs and fish, things like that, buried in those same general layers. Now, this fish was not necessarily found with dinosaurs in the same layer.
Right, yeah.
It's just because they're both classed as Cretaceous, they would say that. But this research was done by a university down in Latin America. It's actually the largest university in Latin America.
And the very interesting idea here is that as we look at this fossil, it might not look identical to something that we have alive today.
It doesn't have the pelvic, the ventral fins.
The different fins are missing. And maybe this specimen's just, those aren't clear. Things like that could be evident in this specimen.
Yeah,
sure, they have more than
that. Trouble with studying fossils. Mm-hmm.
But as we think about this, that's the one of the ways we tell different species of what we call sunfish here in the U.S. apart, is by how many spines they have on those different fin structures. And looking at these things from the fossil record, these are just varieties within these created kinds of fish. So there's nothing to say here that this is a more primitive type of fish just because it's missing those fins. Because today we see fish that are missing certain structures. We think of the features in humans that are supposedly these leftovers from evolutionary history and all these things that we've lost over time. According to the evolutionary view, those aren't necessarily the best or the only explanation for those things. So from a biblical perspective, there's no reason to say something is more primitive because it's missing something. It's a different kind. It was created differently by God in that situation.
So we're seeing people here from Botswana, India, England, UK.
Netherlands over
here.
They're
all over the place online.
All right. Science Daily. Have you ever wondered how many species have inhabited Earth? So I know this has kept people up at night. How many species have inhabited Earth?
Of course,
you have
never.
Then you can fall asleep counting the species.
All of them.
You've never wondered this? Oh, man, I do think about these kinds of things.
Roger thinks about these kinds of things. Yes, that's why he has a show on Answers TV called Unlocking Science, which is awesome, and you have to go check it out.
Because it's fun to think about this stuff and all the things God's created.
So other people other than Roger also think about these things, and so they actually, some professors were exploring this question of how can we settle on a total number of, they were specifically talking about living vertebrates. And can we settle on a total number? Because we haven't discovered all the ones that there are. They're finding more in the rainforest, they're finding more in the deep ocean, places like that. So how do we know how many more they're going to discover in order to create a number of how many living vertebrate species they are? Yeah. And they said they really can't even come up with an estimate because there's just so many unknowns.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
that's
think
the
of
point
some of
the
these
article.
I mean, you know, they're looking at the living ones, but there are certain things that are on the brink of extinction. Have they gone extinct? You got to subtract all of a sudden. You know, in some cases, we can't find them. They're deep in jungles. Sometimes they're in the ocean. You know,
yeah,
we haven't discovered
all these.
We
talked on Answers News a while back about a chameleon species they found that's like, you know, this big. So that can easily go undetected for a very long time because it's itty bitty.
Yeah, and as we think about the idea of the different species, as we mentioned ago, these things have been around, and we see diversity within God's created kinds, and these different species are identified. We find new things in the jungles in Africa and in Asia all the time, and the deep parts of the sea that we haven't explored. Lots of these different species keep popping up. So their perspective is, we're trying to figure out if we use these evolutionary assumptions and we look back in time, assuming there was one original organism that gave rise to all these others, can we figure out how this tree of life looked? And then they can project that into the future. And the angle that the article talks about is the idea of conservation of species so that we can preserve those things for the future.
You can't preserve something that doesn't know exists.
Yeah,
we
so we've got to understand those
species. But why would they want to preserve in their worldview?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
And when I think about that as a biblical creationist trying to understand God's creation, I think all of these creatures give God glory, and he created them for his glory and for our benefit as humans. Let's study them and understand them. Mm-hmm. As we've done that more with different plants and animals, we've found cures for diseases that are part of the effects of the fall.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there are great reasons from a biblical perspective to glorify God. But if we're just really highly evolved animals, just like some of these species.
Or just rearrange chemicals.
And not the pinnacle of evolution.
And not the pinnacle of evolution. Okay, blending all these ideas together as we think about all of this. Then why? What's the purpose of conserving these species? Isn't evolution just marching at a faster pace right now? Isn't that part of the process? If this is a naturalistic worldview, how can we call this good or bad? Why should we devote all these resources to help these species survive? And those are questions without a solid grounding in the Bible, we really can't answer.
Right, and you know, this brings up, you know, another problem. It goes back to that species problem. How do you define a species even? And so we're right back to that same problem. Yeah. Imagine if they tried to expand this into, you know, all the things we find in the fossil record.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, because some of those, you know, we find them in the fossil record, but they're also considered living fossils. You know, so I mean, it becomes bigger problems, you know, if you try to expand.
Yeah, they even talked in the article about how with the new techniques that they have with DNA sequencing and stuff, they're able to be more precise about the differences at a DNA level. So you'll have two populations that look to the eye very, very similar, but then they look at them at a DNA level and they're like, oh no, they're separate species. So that adds to the species count as well, because we didn't have that technology, you know.
Yeah, I think we're going to get close to a number of kinds of organisms, but I don't think we're ever going to know the number of species.
Right. Yeah. And you know, we had to deal with that with the Ark Encounter. You know, we had to work with researchers trying to figure out how many land-dwelling, air-breathing
1,398 animal kinds.
1,400.
1,398 is what the sign says at the Ark.
I know.
Well, there's a book called Living Fossils, Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Volume 2. This is by Dr. Carl Werner. Absolutely beautiful book, by the way. You know, just the imagery and everything is just incredible if you were able to see all that. But this book really runs through a lot of the living fossils that they thought were extinct.
You're going to crash.
Oh, this is going to fall all over the place here.
It's a hefty book.
But hopefully you guys can see that. Living fossils. It's amazing just to be able to see that, hey, a lot of these creatures that we have around today, we find them in some of these rock layers that they associate with dinosaurs and many other things.
The fossils look very similar to the living creatures.
Yeah. It's neat.
All right, our next one here. New York Democrats accuse Chick-fil-A of discrimination, want to ban it from rest stops. So, we've talked about articles like this before. Basically, some of the Democratic lawmakers in New York want to keep Chick-fil-A from being able to be in the different rest stops along the highway so people aren't able to eat there, because in the past, Chick-fil-A has donated to different Christian organizations that shockingly hold to Christian values when it comes to marriage and sexuality. And so because they sometimes donate some money to these groups that hold to historic Christian values, these specific people don't want them to be able to be in these rest stops.
This is a bit of a double standard.
Oh, very much, Lisa.
I mean, they're discriminating against Chick-fil-A, saying that they're discriminating, which is very odd, isn't it? It's kind of self-refuting right up front.
Yeah, a little bit.
So here you have an openly gay legislator from New York who wants to say that if we allow this company to come in and build its restaurants here in these throughways, the toll roads and other places where you don't have to pay to get off and you can stop and get gas and food. And if we do that, we're going to put hundreds of millions of dollars into this company's bank account, and then they're going to turn around and use that
to promote marriage.
No, it's not promoting marriage. They're doing it as an anti-LGBTQ organization.
Yeah, that's
how they try to say. Giving to an organization that has historic Christian values.
So Chick-fil-A's come in under fire, and back in 2019, there was a bit of a storm about this.
I remember that.
And it was Fellowship of Christian Athletes and other groups that are traditionally Christian-led organizations that have those statements of belief that say God created male and female and marriage is for man and woman, those types of things. And rather than framing it as a pro-Christian view, they frame it as an anti-LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. So whoever frames the terms of the debate often gets to give them the spin that they want to.
Right.
So here,
yeah,
that spin has been given by this legislator.
And we shouldn't be surprised. We see this happening all over the place, and it's a reminder for us as believers to continue to not be cowed by these different people that will use certain words as a way of trying to promote hate against believers, but to continue to do, as Scripture says, do the King's business until he comes, contend for the faith, point people towards the message of the gospel. That's what we're here for as believers, to continue to point people towards Christ and give glory to him by standing on the word of God and continuing to say, no, this is what we believe about marriage. We're not going to apologize for it. This is what God has said, and we're going to obey him and follow his word.
You know, it's interesting. The Thruway, this is what the article says, the Thruway Authority responded that no tax or toll dollars are involved with the deal and stress that they, quote, support an inclusive environment that treats the tens of millions of people that travel our system with dignity and respect. But at the same time, they don't want to be inclusive
they
of
Chick-fil-A. They are only inclusive of people but that they agree with.
Here's something else, though. Dignity and respect, where does that come from? Those are Christian concepts.
Yeah, yep. What's the foundation for that in yep. another right. worldview, like naturalism
right.
or...
Are the secularism
that
dominates.
View, mm-hmm. secular views. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in their views, none of that stuff really exists. So they're still mm-hmm. borrowing
they're
from
borrowing
the Bible,
from
whether they realize it or not.
Mm-hmm. Next one comes from New Scientist. Strange gas in Venus's clouds may be a sign of volcanoes, not life. So we commented on the story when it first broke, and it was all over the headlines. Oh, life has been found on Venus. And they didn't find life on Venus. They found a specific gas called a phosphine, and it may possibly have been a signature of life. And so they were like, maybe life created this. There's life in the clouds in Venus. And then we commented on a story of, like, 2 months later that was like, no, it's not life. It's something else. And then there was another story a few months later that was like, no, it's definitely not life. It's something else. And now here's another story saying it's not life. Maybe it's volcanoes that are creating and pushing this gas.
So,
into the atmosphere.
And we can expect this from science. Science advances mm-hmm. by making a claim. Other people test the claim. And so scientists are putting out their ideas. Their ideas get tested. And this seemed to be one of those grandiose claims that, oh, there's life on Venus.
And here when we talked about it, we were like, that's not what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And shockingly.
Shockingly. So here these researchers have proposed that if there's a lot of plate movement, volcanic activity on the surface of Venus, then that could be the source for this phosphorus that's creating this phosphine gas, which normally we would think comes from life-based processes, but it's also from these volcanic sources. Another researcher saying, no, there's not enough of it there to make this happen. But the real problem is we really don't know what's going on Venus because it's surrounded by these huge clouds of concentrated sulfuric acid. Okay. So if you think it's hard to breathe in our atmosphere at the same time,
it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
But so here we'd have a much harder time breathing on Venus because you take about 3 breaths and your lungs would disintegrate with the acid.
Yeah, so, even our probes that we send up there have massive problems just to be able to send signals out.
Yeah, and we don't
so
know.
So we don't really know what Venus
is
going on, what's going on Venus. Yeah, so that makes it really hard for them to make any kind of conclusions because it's like we don't really know anything about Venus.
Yeah, but to propose it's because there's life on Venus, well, that defies everything we know about life. So we have to deny everything we know about how life exists on Earth in order to say life exists on Venus because we want to prop up our evolutionary worldview. Mm-hmm. And those are the strange compromises we're willing to make. And we have to be aware of those things as Christians. We don't want to make those types of mistakes. We want to be thinking consistently. We want to have the Bible as our foundation in all those areas, not our random thoughts and what man happens to believe on that mm-hmm. given day.
Mm-hmm. All right, that doesn't necessarily mean that it is the volcanoes that's doing that.
Right,
we need to make sure of that. Mm-hmm. It's a possibility.
This is like the third different idea they've thrown out for what
right.
it might be.
So, I mean, it's consistent with it, but at the same time, there may be other things because it's a very complex system on Venus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I just want to make sure people say, let's be a little cautious about some of this stuff.
Next one is a very sad one that comes from LifeSite News. Winnipeg man accused of murdering toddler after failing to abort her. So this is out of Winnipeg in Manitoba. And
that's in Canada.
That's in Canada.
Right? Okay, just checking.
That is in Canada. And this was about a man who, when his, not sure if it was his girlfriend or his wife,
That's never spelled out explicitly.
Yeah, got pregnant. He did not want her to have the baby. And apparently, according to her, he first assaulted her to try and get her to miscarry. When that didn't work, he tried to get her to drink some kind of liquid that was some kind of poison, hoping that that would work. And she didn't drink it, so it didn't work. And then he was basically telling her, you need to go get an abortion. You need to go get an abortion. She didn't want one. She chose to keep the child. And then he's being accused of abducting her and killing the toddler. And the reason we're talking about this article is because just pointing out the hypocrisy of this man is now probably, if the judges find him guilty, probably going to go to prison for murdering his father, as he should. But if he had been successful in getting his girlfriend, wife, to have an abortion back when she was pregnant,
just taking
no
her to a clinic
problem.
And
yep,
having
if he
it
just
legally
dropped her off
done.
At the clinic and she had mm-hmm. had gone in and done that, absolutely no problem.
And
exact
even
same,
celebrated
yeah,
and applauded
that would be,
for
yay,
reproductive
woo-hoo.
Freedom and mm-hmm. reproductive justice has been advanced in this case.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's so arbitrary. Exact same child, just a different location. in the womb versus out of the womb. And all of a sudden it's a crime now that he killed this toddler, which it is, but it wouldn't have been a crime if he'd been successful in getting his, in coercing his girlfriend into going in and having an abortion, then that would have been fine. And just the double standard there that we see in countries all around the world, including in Canada, where abortion is very, very, very legal and very, very much just part of the culture.
Yeah, one of the things the article says here is Justin Trudeau, he's in charge of Canada right now.
He's the Prime Minister.
Prime Minister.
He sends tens of millions of tax dollars to abort babies in developing nations, including those nations where abortion is still illegal.
Mm-hmm. And the same thing's true of the United States as well. Yep. Mm-hmm. There are a couple other things that are pointed out here in this article, some other cases that have been carried out in the past. One's where a man was guilty of trying to... assaulting a woman and then the baby dies, those types of things. Those cases have typically in the past been considered a form of murder. But there's all these weird ideas that start to come in from the secular view, because if the child is wanted by the mother, mm-hmm. then it's a murder of that child. It's a double homicide if the mother is killed and the child dies also. And then there's this case that describes of that something like that happening, and then the man being given a reduced sentence upon a judge's review.
Right, they'll downgrade it.
Downgrading it to a lesser charge.
Infanticide.
Infanticide rather than murder.
That was a mother in that case, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So all of these things are really, really challenging ideas from a secular view.
Right.
How are you going to be consistent in this?
Because if you're not going to say that the life in a womb is a life, then, but when it's wanted, all of a sudden it is a life, then you're creating this huge ethical conundrum, which just simply doesn't exist. If you go from a biblical perspective, we understand that life is a human life made in the image of God from the moment of fertilization. So we don't have to be like, well, it's a life here. It's not a life here. Well, it's a life if the mom wants it. Like, we don't have to do any of that, because we understand this child is made in the image of God, and she was mm-hmm. she was her right from the very moment of fertilization. And it's murder whether it takes place in the womb or out of the womb. And whether the Canadian government recognizes that or not, it's still murder.
All right. So there will be a judgment on Judgment Day, won't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And regardless of what we see here happening in the earthly justice system, we mm-hmm. know that God is going to exact perfect justice. Mm-hmm. Every mm-hmm. crime that has been committed, that sin has either been paid for on the cross by Christ mm-hmm. or will be paid for by that person in hell. And those things are ways that we can connect these things mm-hmm. to the gospel.
Yeah.
There's hope for this man. Maybe not on earth. Maybe he will receive a death penalty in his earthly body. But there's hope for him eternally that he can repent of those sins, trust in Christ, mm-hmm. and be forgiven. Abortion is not some special sin that can't be forgiven. Okay. That's not the case.
Yeah.
And we want to remind people that we can be offended by these things and very put off by them. But if we don't direct that anger toward a righteous direction of proclaiming the gospel and pointing to people mm-hmm. of hope, then that anger is misplaced. Our anger, we should be directing that in a righteous way to promote justice and righteousness. Ultimately, that eternal souls would be seen to be repenting and trusting in Christ, not just looking for that future condemnation.
Absolutely.
All right, so I'm seeing people from Scotland, Australia, other countries like California. Can I say? Feels like it sometimes. Actually, I'm getting people from states all over the place. But
all right, this next one. Meghan Markle, Prince Harry received special award from UK charity for decision to have no more than two kids. So in June, in case you don't keep up with the royals, in June they had another baby, a little girl, and so that's two kids for them. And previously, back in 2009, in an interview, Prince Harry said that they were definitely not going to have more than two kids. And so because of that statement that he made back in 2019, they have received, a special award from Population Matters, which allows them to get to donate a certain amount of money to whatever
and
charity they want.
This is a massive, massive award. This royal couple will now have $695
donated
to a charity in their name. Massive thing.
Yeah. But I found this really ironic, because it's like, first of all, they didn't even have their two kids when he said this, and they could very well just change their mind and have, and then what does the charity do? Like, take back the money from the charity that it got donated to? Like, I don't know how that works, but but this whole idea, basically, the charity is basically awarding them because they're doing what's best for the environment. Whoop, there goes the living fossils.
You know what? I think I'm going to lay it down. How's that? You guys can see the spine.
Yeah, they're doing what's best for the environment by only having two children. They're thinking about the future. And just buying into this whole idea that of the world's going to be overpopulated, we're going to use up all the resources, mm-hmm. so you need to only have a small family.
And see, that's a religious battle. A lot of people don't realize that. You know, God says, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth. But at the same time, we're in a secular culture where people are like, oh no, we've got all this population, we need to reduce the population, we need to support euthanasia, we need to support abortion, and we need to reduce mm-hmm. the population, because we're going to run out.
Yeah.
I mean, have they not been to the wide open spaces of Antarctica or
Idaho.
Or Texas
Everyone
or Idaho?
Northern Canada.
I mean, where I was at in Illinois, we had 6,000 people in the whole county, and that included the inmates and the prison. You know, I mean... There's still a lot of space.
And humans are innovative. We come up with new solutions to be able to deal with different problems. Because there have been claims of overpopulation for decades now, mm-hmm. and we continue to come up with new ways to continue to live on the earth that God gave us.
Another claim is they make the claim that a smaller family is a happier family. That's obviously true, right?
Oh, my word. How do you even make a claim like that and in any way support such an idea? I mean, I come from a family that most people consider probably a big family. I have 14 siblings. and we were very happy. We are very happy.
Happy.
There's people from small families that are happy, people from big families that are happy, people from big families that aren't happy, and people from small families that aren't happy. That's such a stupid thing to say.
You know what it is? It's related to sin.
Yeah, sin is what makes conflict in families, not the size of the family. Anyway, that article I wasn't too good with. All right, do we have time to hit this last one real quick? Okay, we're not going to get into the details of this one because the details we can't even discuss on this program. And yet this is talking about first grade students as well as high school students. So I'll read you the headline here. New York Times shocked. Parents oppose porn literacy in schools. So this is talking about
first graders.
An article that was written in the New York Times. That was basically defending a school counselor who teaches a porn literacy class to high school students, as well as teaches another class to first grade students. That again, we can't talk about on the program.
Yeah,
but it's being taught to first grade students.
Defining the terms, her view is called sex positive rather than promoting pornography. So back to that idea.
And they wonder why parents oppose it.
Yeah, and then parents got really upset for some reason, and so the New York Times wrote this piece defending her and basically treating her like a martyr for the cause of teaching children, and it's the bad parents who are standing in the way. And the reason we're talking about this disgusting article is because we want to make parents aware of these things that are being taught in certain schools. Mm-hmm. It's not mainstream yet, but it's getting there. And most of the parents had no clue this was happening until Zoom school, and they started overhearing the things their students, and this is a private school where the parents pay $47,000 a year to send their children. And they started overhearing the things their kids were learning, and they're like, wait a second, what is my kid learning at this school? And they got mad for some reason.
If my parents would have known some of the stuff I was taught at the school that I grew up with, and this is 20 plus years ago, I mean, they would have been shocked. There's no way I would have went home and told my parents some of the stuff that some of my teachers had told me. I mean, it was just shocking related to things like this.
One of the things the Times says here, they say sex educators compare it, the teaching of pornography and these other views, to teaching math or English. Well, of course they do, because their worldview is going to color those things.
Yeah.
And there was one thing I wholeheartedly agreed with in this article. Hey, they quote, while parents may not want to believe that their teenagers are viewing pornography, many of them probably are on purpose or by accident. And that's
true. Yes.
Whether your child has an electronic device, a phone, mm-hmm. or they're acquainted mm-hmm. with somebody who does, these things are happening. And you need to be very aware of that as a parent mm-hmm. and be proactive about it and be teaching and training and mm-hmm. guiding them in those things.
And having open conversations with them. So if they do stumble mm-hmm. across something, they're able to come to you and they don't feel embarrassed or like they can't talk to you. They can come to you. You're not going to their teachers, but coming to you as a parent to talk to you about it. Because contrary to what these teachers think, this is not the teacher's role. This is a parent's role. And they always spin this as, mm-hmm. well, we don't want people to have these negative views. And like, there's a lot of things in pornography that we don't want the children to think is normal and healthy. And so we're going to teach them about it. And they're like, no, this is a parent's responsibility to teach them. And they're the parent's ethic, not what the school wants them to believe. So
especially
we need to be aware
ages.
That this is in schools and it's coming. coming, because this is not the first article on this we've seen, so parents need to be aware of
that. It's a challenge as a Christian, because we often think of sexuality as this shameful thing we don't want to talk about, but really it's a good gift that God has given us that we need to do in the proper context of marriage. And we need to be speaking about these things biblically and clearly with our children so that they can understand these things. And so there's not an aura of shame around something that God created to be very good. When it's misused, there's shame there.
Like in pornography.
But let's speak of it in an honorable way, in a discreet way, as appropriate and biblically aligned. But let us be the ones who are encouraging our children to come to us and understand these things, rather than going to their teachers and their peers and those types of situations.
And that might be a challenge to grandparents as well, dealing with some of this. So I know a lot of you are heavily involved in your grandkids.
That's all the time that we have for today. Yep. But the Answers News team will be back again on Monday. I did want to make a super quick announcement before we close, though, is just so everyone knows that I'm not dropping off the face of the earth.
I'm going
to
cry.
Roger might cry. I might cry. We'll see. As everyone knows, I'm Canadian. My work visa situation, my visa is still in process, and we've run out of time to stay in the U.S. So we're being temporarily booted back to Canada, and we will be there for a while. I'll still be working with Answers in Genesis as a contractor, but you won't see my Answers News or speaking or anything for a little bit. And then as soon as we get that work visa, we will be back. So hopefully the USCIS is quick and we get that back, but we'll be gone for a little time. So we'll miss you,
but
I'll be back soon. So thank you so much, and the Answers News team will be back on Monday.
God bless you.